Next, we're going to go to Por Bandar, or Sandipani Muni Puri, the place of Sandipani Muni. And that subject matter is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in chapter 80 of Canto 10. Before we enter into that subject matter, Sudama, of course, Sudama is an eternal associate of Krishna, and his qualities and his relationship with Krishna are honored again and again and again and again for a variety of reasons. One of them is he's the epitome or the perfect example of what Queen Kunti speaks of in her prayers as someone who is able to feelingly call to Krishna, because as long as one has material shelters, one cannot, according to Queen Kunti, akinchana vitaya or akinchana gotra. In two verses she speaks of this spiritual qualification is not having, just like our discussion for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, having no material shelter. Having exclusive spiritual shelter requires having no material shelter. Well, you can have some of both. Commonly, we have some of both. But Sudama doesn't have some of both. There's a book written by one of Lord Chaitanya's associates, Jagat Ananda Pandit, who had a very unique relationship, to say the least, very unique relationship with Lord Chaitanya. He was very young compared to all of the other associates of Mahaprabhu. Also, although his age was young, he was spiritually mature. And the relationship that he had with Lord Chaitanya was like Satyabhama and her relationship with Krishna, where Jagadananda Pandit would talk back to Krishna or to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, very interesting relationship. And one of the books that he wrote was Prema Vivarta. We know the meaning of prema, and Vivarta means hidden or secret. So he had this love for Lord Chaitanya that looked like confrontation instead of love, sometimes. And so lots of pastimes are described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he begins the book basically saying, I don't care if people understand or don't understand what I'm going to write. I just want to share my heart and my feelings for Lord Chaitanya. Whether people understand it or don't understand it, here goes. And it's very amazing, the love that he had for Lord Chaitanya. But that love was singular. Even when he was saying or doing things apparently displeasing, it was for Lord Chaitanya's pleasure, because he knew nothing else. Like the left-wing gopis, they would talk back to Krishna or criticize Krishna or say, get out of here, and, you know, all kinds of things. Like Radharani's talk with the bumblebee. You're the unreliable servant of an unreliable master. Get out. then the bumblebee disappeared. No, no, come back, come back. Don't say that to Krishna. I know what Krishna's like, but I'm just attached to him anyway. Don't tell him that. He may not come back. Oh, why do I speak like this? So, in Prema Vivarta, Jagatananda, there's one end of a chapter where he says, basically not verbatim, but he says, don't make the mistake of trying to cross a river with one foot in two different boats. Similarly, spiritual life means put both feet in one boat, the Krishna boat, and then you can cross the ocean of material existence. Don't make the mistake of being divided in your devotion. Because devotion is exclusive. So, Sudama was such an exclusive devotee. He had no interest in anything material. Akinchana. Now, some persons can be akinchana, we'll hear. They can be akinchana and have opulence. Or they can be akinchana and have no opulence or poverty. And both are difficult. To have opulence, generally, we heard yesterday evening from Manoj, you have opulence and you become proud. I'm up here and others don't have that which I have up here, and so you become proud. It's the conditioned tendency. And the spiritual position is opulence or no opulence. Ambarish Maharaj said, opulence that surpassed the heavenly planets equaled that of the spiritual world. Yudhisthira had opulence, third canto says, that surpassed the heavenly planets. But he had no interest in having the opulence and enjoying the opulence, being the enjoyer of the opulent position of being a king. In any case, Sudama had no opulence. He was just the opposite. Like another dear associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kolavachar Sridhar, was extremely poor. His poverty was so severe that most people would die. But he wasn't dying. He was very happy. And he went on living in devotion to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Sudama was like that. And Krishna, what is Krishna attracted to someone who has opulence and not attracted to someone that doesn't know? So there's several references. I'm just going to point to a few of them. The first two are from Lochandas Thakur's Chaitanya Mangala and Vrindavandas Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat. They're glorifications of Lord Chaitanya, describing how Lord Chaitanya and Krishna, the personality of Godhead, birth or beauty or wealth, was Kubja beautiful? Krishna went and visited her. Was Gajendra highly educated? An elephant. Was Sudama wealthy? Was Vidura attractive to Krishna because of his high birth? And similar other references. Was Dhruva disqualified because he was just a little boy? His age wasn't sufficient for Lord Vishnu to become attracted. But that's not what attracts the Supreme Lord. What attracts the Supreme Lord is the singular devotion to him. And in a similar vein, what Sudama in his poverty had to offer to Krishna was insignificant. It was inferior quality. He didn't even have enough wealth in his house when he went to visit Krishna to bring a gift from his house. His wife had to go to a neighbor and took 4 palmfuls of broken flat rice, put it in a little handkerchief, tied the corners, and off he went. Even if he is thirsty, the Lord does not even glance at water offered by a proud person in an opulent, jeweled water cup. The Lord eats with full satisfaction any item offered by his servant, regardless of whether the offering was made according to regulations. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. This is Vrindavan Das. Even if his servant does not offer an item because he considers it too insignificant, the Lord forcibly eats it. Sudama. The evidence of this was when the Lord ate Sudama Brahman's broken rice in Dwarka. The Lord even accepts the remnants of his servants. What's the example? Draupadi's pot. Yeah. Draupadi's pot. When Durvas Muni was sent by Duryodhana to visit the Pandavas after they had eaten, so the pot could not produce anything purposely so that Durvasa would become angry and do something bad for the Pandavas. Krishna came, took some piece of spinach or whatever clinging to the side of the pot and became fully satisfied. Remnants of his devotee, Krishna. Krishna's father, Krishna's mother, Krishna's wife and brother are all his servants. Krishna does not recognize anyone other than his servants. The Lord accepts the form that his servant meditates upon, and Krishna's servant can even sell him. Bhaktisiddhanta commenting on this verse from Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it makes reference to Sudama. If anyone in the material world has many possessions, then he naturally becomes proud. Such a proud person then takes shelter of misconceptions like, I am the best, I am rich, I am the best collector of ingredients for worship of the Lord, I'm a great devotee, and Vaishnavas like Sridhar Swami are Mayavadis. Lord Sri Gaurasundar does not even glance at such people or desire to accept any of their offerings. The awe and reverence of this material world is unable to oblige the Supreme Lord, who is the object of Vishramba. Sakya means friendship and equality, or Vatsalya, Madhurya, etc. The Supreme Lord forcibly, yet affectionately, takes even an insignificant item that is given by his poor devotee. And the Lord ignores items offered according to proper etiquette by wealthy, proud persons. And he refers to Sudama. The Lord accepted with pleasure the leafy vegetables collected in the forest and offered by Yudhisthira during his exile, and so on. Referred to in Rupa Goswami's collection of sayings or poems, is one by Ramanujacharya. He's also specifically honoring Sudama. Oh, Lord Murari. It's like an offering of a prayer when making offerings to the Lord, to the deity. I hope that just as you enjoyed the palatable food presented by the wives of the Brahmanas, the meal offered by Vidura, the milk and yogurt of the cows of Raja, the handful of chipped rice from your friend Sudama, Brahmana, the breast milk of Mother Yashoda, and the delicious foods prepared by the young girls of Braja, you will also enjoy the offering I now place before you. Krishna accepts the love and devotion, not the quality of the ingredients. There are several other references. Bhaktisiddhanta describes this quality of a kinchana. He says, when Prahlad Maharaj, after he became the king in place of his father Hiranyakashipu, he had all the opulence of Hiranyakashipu at his disposal. But the Lord wasn't neglectful of him because, oh, now he's opulent, and vice versa. Because Sudama had no opulence, the opposite. Impoverished, the Lord didn't neglect him. The quality they both had that was similar was akinchana. They have no material desire, and therefore whether they had opulence or didn't have opulence, because they had no material desire, they had, that's possible only when there's spiritual desire. That's the akinchana is a negative way of saying one who has exclusive devotion to Krishna. One who has exclusive devotion to Krishna is akinchana. They have no material desire. Because everything of this world, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, everything of this world is the property of Krishna, so we don't have the right to take even a blade of grass unless it's for the service of Krishna, and akinchanas know that. So in other words, whatever, if they have a blade of grass or whatever it is they have, it's the property of Krishna. They have no material property. They have no material possessions, per se, because they understand everything is Krishna's possessions, and therefore meant to be in service of the one who owns it. And his indication is that consciousness is gifted, is awarded to someone who is engaged in hearing the Lord's glories, and it's sustained by hearing the Lord's glories, and one has the interest only in hearing the Lord's glories and not interested in ordinary subject matter. It's naturally so. So the summary is, Sudama is honored all over the place. Oh, it's just one of the pastimes. And similarly, this is how the story of Sudama appears in the Bhagavatam, Canto 10. It comes after Chapter 79. And Chapter 79 focus is on Balaram. So there's several parts in this chapter 79, which 79, of course, is preceded by so many. Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna in Mathura, Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna marries the queens, Krishna attends the Rajasuya Yajna, Krishna kills Jarasandha, or has Jarasandha killed by Bhima. Shishupal, Salva. So Krishna's busy taking care of the demons. And then comes Balaram, chapter 79. Balaram kills Balvala. And then he decides to go on pilgrimage because he doesn't want to take part in the Kurukshetra battle, as Krishna is not going to take part in the Kurukshetra battle. And he returns when he hears that there's going to be this battle between Duryodhana and Bhima, he tries to dissuade both of them from fighting one another because he was their teacher, but they go at it anyways. Then he continues his travel. He gives teachings. Balaram gives teaching. The original spiritual master gives teachings to yogic brahmanas. And that concludes the chapter with Shukadeva Goswami saying, basically, wow. You know, the pastimes of Balaram are just amazing. And anyone who regularly hears them or remembers them will become very dear to Krishna. So, Maharishi Parikshit, having heard all of these 79 chapters of the 10th canto, on one hand, he's feeling very satisfied. On the other hand, he's not dissatisfied, but he wants to hear more. So the next chapter, this chapter with Sudama in it, has the beginning section is very important. It's a description of the hankering of one who has tasted the nectar of Krishna Katha. That hankering doesn't become diminished, it becomes increased. Your appetite becomes greater after eating. One wants to hear more and more. So he says, you've described so many wonderful things. Can you describe the things you haven't described yet? Whatever they are. Because many things he's asked specific questions. And he says, anyone who knows what the essence of life is, and anyone who has become disgusted with endeavoring for sense gratification, how could they stop this process of hearing? So there's a long section of commentary indicating what the effect, if you're hearing properly, sometimes devotees ask, how do we know for effectively making advancement? So here's two gold standards for that. The essence of life has become again focused. The mission of life, the purpose of life, the motivating factor or the inspirational factor that's operating in your life becomes stronger, dominant, and keep going. Can't even imagine. You can't live without that prominent aspect of life dominating everything that you do. At the very heart beat, your heart. So similarly, being very focused on this life of the purpose of life and other activities, they don't hold significance anymore. So the diminishing of material affinity and the increasing of spiritual affinity. And this is essentially what's being said here. A long commentary, but the two terms are visana, means, literally it means morose. So how is it a transcendentalist is morose? Well, they're not morose in the way that a materialist becomes morose. That's the mode of ignorance. But the sadness that one feels that I have wasted my life, this humility again. Krishna, I was pursuing so many other ephemeral things. And around me, I see a world filled with, like Prahlad, I see a world filled with people that are continuing to do that. That's all they know. They don't know anything else. That makes me visana, makes me sad, makes me pained. For myself, I don't have any misgiving. But these, Prabhupada's translation is these poor fools and rascals. They're misguided, misdirected, chasing after illusion. That's anxiety for me. Or, again, reflecting on one's own past activity and feeling regretful. It's purifying. But then the forward direction is having a very clear sense of what life's purpose really is and eagerly pursuing that. Like the girl yesterday evening, what's her name? Surabhi, was saying, you know, I don't know where the third generation is going to happen. I don't know what the third generation is. I don't know what the third generation is going to happen. Well, you're the third generation. Make it happen. Go forward. Be what you want the world to be. Be as Krishna conscious as you could be. That's what the future is going to be. Whatever you make the future. Because you're ISKCON. You're the future of ISKCON. Go forward. And this other word, yajna. Visheshagya means, gya means knowledge. Visheshagya, knowledge of transcendental variegatedness. So the devotees are very enthused to hear the pastimes of Krishna, for example. That's what Maharaj Pariksit's qualification is. His appetite is insatiable. More, just keep piling it on. Because the appetite for knowing the variegated glories and transcendental aspects of Krishna is insatiable. It just makes one more hungry, more eager to hear. Hearing leads to more hearing. Eagerness for more hearing. Constantly relishing the variegated ways of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So on the one hand, there's disgust in the inferior things. On the other hand, transcendental eagerness, insatiable transcendental eagerness for kirtan, for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, for worshipping the deity form of the Lord, for remembering Krishna, for etc. That's Maharaj Pariksit. That's the result of someone who has the qualification to hear, like the question the other day of how to increase our receptivity of this transcendental message. Here's Prabhupada's comment. Well, first, Maharaj Pariksit continued, actual speech is that which is canto, the hands are those which work for him. A mind always remembers him, dwelling within everything and the moving and non-moving. Ears listen to the topics that sanctify the ears by hearing about him. Similar to the reverse is, what's the use of legs that don't walk to the temple of the Lord? It's like tree trunks. What's the use of eyes that don't see the form of the Lord? It's like the feathers of a peacock. What's the use of the hands that do not cleanse the temple of the Lord, and so forth? So the senses are meant for that purpose, and one who is understanding that purpose, that's how they engage. And then specifically, the feature of the mind. Here's Prabhupada in Krishna book, paraphrasing or restating what's in the verse. I find it really nice. Like, really nice. One's mind can be peaceful only when one simply thinks of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. This does not mean that one has to be very thoughtful, semicolon. One simply has to understand that Krishna, the absolute truth, is all pervasive by his localized aspect as Paramatma. If only, in italics, if only one can think that Krishna as Paramatma is everywhere, even within the atom, one can then perfect the thinking, feeling, and willing functions of his mind. Sounds too simple. Yes to Krishna message, by the way. Just another way of saying, say yes to Krishna message. Because under Krishna's direction is all things. Maya Jakshena Prakriti. And just say yes to Krishna. And that's the perfect function of thinking, feeling, and willing in relation to whatever's going on out there. Krishna's in control of the Prakriti. World as it appears to the material eyes, for he sees everywhere the presence of the worshipable Lord in his Paramatma feature. There's several places where Prabhupada speaks like this. This is a high platform, but one sees things, Prabhupada's example, you see a tree, you don't just see the tree, you see Krishna there. What does that mean? Like I do pretty skinny Krishna. It's, you see things in relation to Krishna. And then it's not just material, oh, that's connected to Krishna seeing. It's you see Krishna there. It's transcendental seeing. Different kind of seeing than just seeing the object. It's Marsh Prikshit is on the sitting on the edge of his straw mat saying, more. And my feeling, my wish for more is based upon the strong urge to hear more, hear more. Whatever you haven't already said about Krishna, please say more. Because my appetite is insatiable and I'm not interested in anything else. I just let me go out hearing, mind fixed on Krishna. So imagine how that inspires the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami, to go on, so he goes on. So the very next verse, he speaks about Sudama. And he characterizes Sudama in two ways. And this friend of Krishna named Sudama was perfectly learned in Vedic knowledge, and he was perfectly detached from sense, all sense enjoyment. So similarly, strong, he was a vastly learned person. Vedavid, fully knowledgeable, but not just, you know, academic knowledge, fully realized knowledge, so much so he was satisfied within, so much so he was not interested. He didn't even think about sense gratification. Jiva Goswami comments like this. A person who has come to the perfection of knowledge surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, any person who has surrendered his life for the service of the Personality of Godhead has come to the point of perfect knowledge. That's the result. Perfect knowledge results in, or a symptom of it is, surrender, full surrender to the Personality of Godhead. The result of that is then also detachment from the materialistic way of life. And the result of that is complete control of the senses. That means when you extend your senses, it's for service, and otherwise you're not interested in something unless it's for the purpose of the Lord's service. So you're unaffected being in the material world because you're serving Krishna or serving Krishna, whether your senses are moving this way or this way. The absorption, there must be control of the senses, otherwise there can't be peace of mind. But one whose mind, we train our mind through sadhana bhakti to go to Krishna, the mind will become purified and then the mind can give direction to the senses and the senses will follow if the mind is strong in Krishna consciousness. As far as things of this material world, the duality, because he's impoverished, but he's not complaining or whining or worrying or I have to go get a job. I got fired. Lost my job. What am I going to do? His job is service to Krishna, whatever that means. So no anxiety. And it's described that his wife was of the same quality. She was as Krishna conscious and as detached from worldly things as he was, fortunately. Because that otherwise it would have been a big problem for his wife. But she was like him, in quality like him. In fact, Vishwanath says she was more renounced than him because whenever there was something, she would immediately give it to her husband because she was concerned about the welfare of her husband. So she had even a greater degree externally of renunciation than him. But being a loving wife, she was concerned with the welfare of her frail husband. It said that his body was so skinny that his veins were bulging through the skin. Just skin and bones and veins. Not much else. And his cloth, his one cloth, had so many holes in it. It wasn't like I'm embarrassed my husband doesn't have a nice cloth to wear. It just, as the wife, she couldn't stand to see her husband so poorly attired. And so, from time to time, or in fact regularly, she would appeal to him. Now, in her appeal to go see Krishna, she understood Krishna's position. It's again, this is Dwaraka mood where she knew that Krishna and Sudama or Sudama and Krishna were dear friends. She also knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I guess she was considering herself very fortunate. My husband is a dear friend of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she then would regularly appeal. I'm not going to go through the whole thing because of time, but she was like her husband. She was very intelligent. She's a Brahmani. She knew the art of logic and reason, and through logic and reason, she basically checkmated her husband. And whatever he may say, well, wait a minute, you know, I feel embarrassed to go. Well, you don't even have to even ask because one who gives their heart to Krishna, Krishna gives himself to them. Well, you know, because you're a Brahmana and he loves Brahmanas. Well, I'm not a qualified Brahmana. Well, even if you're not a qualified Brahmana, Krishna is very kind anyways to all, and just like one after the next. And, you know, she checkmated her husband and her concern was not for wealth. Her concern was the husband of the goddess of fortune and will easily give to a brahmana anything that the brahmana requires. So Sudama was more than reluctant. He didn't want to petition his dear friend Krishna for anything. But the real principle that persuaded him, besides the affection that he had for his wife, and husbands understand when these things come up, then some of those points that the wife really, really, really is important, you have to yield. So the greater reason was, if I go, I'll get to see my dear friend Krishna. So it's something like Akura in his journey to go see Krishna, sent by Kamsa. He's just meditating on what it's going to be like when I go see Krishna in Dwarka, or Kura when I go see Krishna in Vrindavan. It's that when you go to see Krishna, you're meditating on what it's going to be like. And so it's not, you don't necessarily know what the exchange is going to be, but meditating on that form of Krishna that he knew from his childhood. And the qualities of Krishna, the nature of Krishna's loving feature is he may speak like this. He loves the brahmanas and he'll want to honor me as a brahmana and he'll do this and he'll say that. And just, you know, anticipating the loving exchange between the two. So he agreed to go. And to go see Krishna, it's 104 kilometers from Sudama. And to get there took quite some time. And as well, Dwarka is out in the sea. Now there's a bridge, and there's also boats. According to the commentary, took a boat. And to enter into Dwarka, there's military, you know, border patrol people to make sure that intruders wouldn't come. And he, because he was a Brahmin, he was able to pass through all of that without any difficulty. And unlike, there were two others, a king and a Brahmana who went to school together. And they became fast friends. And the young prince said to the young Brahmana, when I become king, we're such good friends, I'll share half the kingdom with you. And then later when he grew up and became the king, and the Brahmana came to visit him, he just ignored him because he was so poor. It was an embarrassment to have association with such a poor fellow. Who was that? Right. Dronacharya, and the king's name? Drupad. But Krishna wasn't like Drupad. Not at all. That friendship, when Krishna saw Sudama coming, he saw him from a distance before he even got to the palace of Rukmini. He saw him and immediately he was filled with joy. And he stood, and when Sudama came before him, immediately, literally worshipped him. There's the detailed description of how that worship went on. And Rukmini, who is the goddess of fortune, worshipped the Brahmana along with her good husband, Krishna. Because she also has great affection for the Brahmanas. Especially, we're assuming, qualified Brahmanas, not just somebody who by birth is a Brahmana. So she participated in the worship also. And the other residents in the palace were wondering, what's going on? Look at this fellow that looks, you know, like a pauper. A cloth that has more holes than cloth. And they couldn't understand. They could understand that there's something between the two, but what was between the two was amazing. The residents of the palace said, "What pious acts has this unkempt, impoverished Brahmana performed? People regard him as lowly and contemptible, yet the spiritual master of the three worlds, the abode of the goddess Shri, is serving him reverently, leaving the goddess of fortune sitting on her bed. The Lord has embraced this Brahmana as if he were an older brother." And by the way, the same language is used by the wife of Sudama, where she refers to Krishna as the spiritual master of the three worlds. I find it amazing. You know, like, they understand the residents of Dwarka, they understand Krishna's divinity. At the same time, they're acknowledging these other relationships. It's not Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha, that there isn't all this other kind of relationship thing like there is in Dwarka. So therefore, there's more, it's more personal, or I shouldn't say more personal, it's more intimate. There's more madhurya, there's more sweetness in the exchange. It's not the same, all the sweetness that's in Vrindavan, it's so sweet that they can't even see the distinction of Krishna's greatness or his divinity. In Dwarka, that's some of both. Very interesting. Shukadeva Goswami continued, taking each other's hands, Krishna and Sudama talked pleasantly about how they once lived together in the school of their guru. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear Brahmana, you know well the ways of Dharma. After you offered the gift of remuneration to our guru and returned home from his school, did you marry a compatible wife? Even though you are mostly involved in household affairs, your mind is not affected by material desire, nor, O learned one, nor do you take much pleasure in the pursuit of material wealth." I think we're going to need another battery. "This I am well aware of. Having renounced all material propensities which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by material desires. Such unattached persons haven't the least desire to accumulate wealth and prosperity for sense gratification, but sometimes they are found to collect money just to exhibit the exemplary life of a householder." So those of you that are aspiring to become exemplary householders, you don't have to become like Sudama. But if you go this other route, this Yukta Vairagya route of engaging things in Krishna's service, make sure that your spirit is akinshana. I think we turned the volume up a little bit. Can you turn this one? You have a different microphone. "They act as I do to instruct the general populace. They show how, by proper distribution of wealth, one can become an ideal householder and at the same time a great devotee. Such ideal householders are to be considered followers of my footsteps." That's what Krishna was doing. He was in Dwarka with 16,108 palaces and opulent like anything. But at the same time, the degree of charity that Krishna was engaged in was equally phenomenal. And qualified kings of his time, seeing his example, followed his example. One of the places that we visited was in Dwarka, was where King Nriga was liberated. Now he was also, I mean, the number of cows that he gave, I forget the number, but it's some gargantuan number, more than you have fingers and toes for sure. And he did it every day. I mean, it probably took him all day just to give away cows and go home and have his dinner. But there was a mix. For Krishna, obviously, no mix. And for other qualified kings, no mix. Akinchana personalities, no mix. They can still be involved in the world, but not attached to anything. It's a hard... You can't imitate. Not only is it a hard condition to reach, you can't imitate it. You can't just, like, twist your mind around in the right shape and then you got it. Like a Rubik's Cube or something. It takes attachment to Krishna. And nothing else works. And when attachment to Krishna is there, then this ideal householder life can become possible. So you don't have to be destitute like Sudama, but you have to be not attached. Like Krishna. Vishwanath comments, it's all very nice, and then there's the time factor. So Vishwanath says he's reading Krishna's mind and he's reading Sudama's mind. Krishna said, just see, though this man is a householder, he is without desires and does not want anything from others. Even if he is given some charity by force, he will not accept it. So then Krishna thought, although he didn't say it, I want to broadcast the glories of Sudama, and in so doing, I'm not going to reveal what he came here to see me for to anyone. Nor outwardly will I give him charity while here. I'm going to wait till he goes. Because then, you know, he'd get glorified and he doesn't want that, and so I'll do it a different way. He's just reading, Vishwanath's reading the mind of Krishna, who's reading the mind of Sudama. Very intimate. Krishna said, I know very well that you did not take sannyas. Because he's asked him, did you get married? I know very well you did not take sannyas, even though you are renounced. Those who are detached engage in work even though their minds are not attracted by material desires. By working in this way, they give up the perverted propensity of the mind to create desires for material enjoyment. As a householder, I act according to the scriptural injunctions in order to teach the people in general. You can teach people this way, you can teach people that way. Although their direction that their lives went in was altogether a different apparent direction, they were doing the same thing. Teaching how to live your life in the mood of detachment. Then comes a very important and sweet section. It's describing their relationship with Sandipani Muni. What time should I end? I mean, what time do we... should conclude the Sudama section in the afternoon. Because it's so nice, and I want to rush through it. It's very nice. So in addition to Srimad Bhagavatam, each of our acharyas wrote something about Krishna's pastimes. In Bhagavatamrita. And in Jiva Goswami's case, he wrote Gopal Champu. Rupa Goswami also wrote, you know, the Stavamala. He wrote little sayings of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka and outside of Dwarka. Vidagdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami also. So Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami wrote a manual on how to write a champu, and then he wrote a champu, another book, Gopal Champu. So the pastimes of Krishna. And part of the pastimes of Krishna is the Sudama description. And it starts with Krishna's returning. So there's the Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, that section. And then now there's this decision of how Sandipani Muni was chosen as the guru. So when Krishna got to Mathura, the short is Vasudeva and Devaki wanted to have him receive his brahminical initiation, or Gayatri Mantra, receiving Gayatri Mantra. We say brahminical initiation. He was a Kshatriya. So received Gayatri, Upanayana. So they wanted Gargamuni to perform that Upanayana ceremony. So there's going to be a big festival. And Krishna didn't mind, but just before the ceremony was to take place, Rohini came shortly after Krishna got there. Rohini came. And when Krishna, this is Gopal Champu, when Krishna saw Rohini and Rohini saw Krishna, both of them thought of Mother Yashoda. When you see your Rohini and you see Krishna, you think of Mother Yashoda. And when you're Krishna seeing Rohini, you think of Mother Yashoda. Loved by both of them. Krishna's mother in Vrindavan. So Rohini was thinking, all of Krishna's friends who are in the Vaishya community, they should also get their Upanayana, but she didn't want to say it. Because, you know, the mood was different in Mathura. And Krishna didn't want to disturb the people in Mathura, so he made a suggestion. He sent a message through the florist, Sudama the florist, to take a message back to Nanda Maharaj. And this is Gopal Champu. And the message was, the other cowherd boys, I'm going to have this Upanayana ceremony. Can the other cowherd boys on the same day, at the same time, have their Upanayana? We can't be at the same place at the same time, but at the same time, different places. That would be very nice. Can you arrange that? Nanda Maharaj just wants to do what Krishna wants, so that was arranged. And Rohini was very pleased that Krishna was thinking of the residents of Vrindavan, because she had great affection and understood their mood of the residents of Vrindavan. And the residents of Vrindavan are very happy Krishna is thinking of us. Gopal Champu. So it happened. Same day, two different places, same ceremony. Then there was the consideration, primarily according to Gopal Champu, as Krishna was deciding who would be his teacher. So he considered, well, the most obvious persons to be teachers of the Vedas, because that's what boys do after they have their Upanayana, they study the Vedas, it'd be Vyas. But Vyas knows who Krishna is, and he's not going to say, how can I be your teacher? So he won't accept. And other persons that are similarly Vaishnavas of qualification, Vaishnava Brahmanas, they're not going to accept that position. So it has to be a non-Vaishnava Brahmana. This is Gopal Champu, Krishna's, you know, evaluating who should be my teacher. So somebody that's a worshipper of Lord Shiva. So there's this dynasty from Kashi where Sandipani Muni is far distance away from Mathura, and he's a renowned teacher of young boys, and that would be really good. He previously was in Prabhas, and then he went to Avanti, and now he's living in Avanti, conducting a school over there. That would be really good. And then in addition, I can go incognito, because it's so far away, nobody will know. And since I killed Kamsa, then there are people maybe hostile to the members of the outer dynasty, but while I'm gone, if nobody knows I'm gone, they may not come. So I'll go to this distant place. And if the members of the residents in Vrindavan come to know that I've gone somewhere to school, then they may give up their lives, so I just have to, like, keep it hush-hush. So nobody will know. So he sent a text message to Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni said, sure, come on over. And they went barefoot because they had taken vows of a student, brahmachari vows, and brahmachari vows include such things. They didn't have a conveyance, they didn't have shoes, they just walked. Those of you that are from, almost all of you from India, from the distance from Mathura to Ujjain, quite a distance. They walked the whole distance. And at night, they're resting along the way, and Krishna is speaking to Balaram about the residents of Vrindavan. It's not that he forgot the residents of Vrindavan any more than the residents of Vrindavan forgot him. And when they got to the school of Sandipani Muni, no one could figure out who they were, because here's these two effulgent boys, but dressed like ordinary brahmacharis. Who are they? So they came to meet, like an interview with Sandipani Muni, and he came to understand who they were from the Yadu dynasty, young princes, son of Vasudeva and Devaki, exalted personality. So he gave him the rules. You're going to have to, like, set all that aside and just be humble and submissive and do begging on behalf of the spiritual master and take the alms that you've gathered and give them to me. I'll have my wife prepare them, and that's what we'll have for our meal in the ashram. So whatever's collected on behalf of the spiritual master is the property of the spiritual master. Are you up for that? So they were very happy. So this is now, it's the worldly dimension of Krishna's pastime. He doesn't need to study anything. He doesn't need to become the menial servant of anybody. But he's taking that position because Krishna's consideration is, if I don't do this, the whole world will follow and everything will become ruined. So, I want to do this, and besides, Sandipani Muni is my dear devotee, and I like this relationship of I'm down here and he's up there, and that's nice. Krishna's happiness for Krishna. That's one of their relationships. Like he has mother and father, he has a teacher. It's rasa. But it's, at the same time it's rasa, it's also, he's conducting himself in apparently worldly ways. Something that I neglected to mention this morning. Similarly, when Jarasandha was making his harsh statements about Krishna, the acharyas, starting with Jiva Goswami, then also Vishnu, said, what kind of a fight is this? Why would Krishna, the personality of Godhead, the maintainer of the three worlds, be doing fighting with this insignificant nobody who is a demon, unless there was some happiness in it for Krishna? And what happiness is there in it for Krishna to fight a demon? And then he goes on and says, well, if it was his universal form, there'd be no match. So he didn't do this with his universal form, it was in his human form. And his human form, it was to protect the Yadus, his family members. He was upholding the codes of a king or the princely order. And here's someone coming to attack the Yadu clan. So he assumed this human form and acted in a human-like, apparently human-like way as part of his leela and to at the same time simultaneously fulfill his purpose of appearing to annihilate the demoniac kings, as Mother Earth in the form of a cow had appeared before him, made that request. He's accomplishing many things with one thing. So also in his school of Sandipani Muni, he's accomplishing many things with one thing. One day, Sandipani Muni's wife asked him, "Among all your students, who are the most devoted?" Sandipani Muni said, "Gopal Champu, the two Kshatriya sons." She said with a smile, "I do not see them serving you." He said, "Out of affection, I forbid them from serving. Visibly, they follow the order, but when no one is looking, they serve. I have observed this." Though there were hundreds of students with equal qualities, Krishna was attracted to Sudama, Sharma. It's a Brahmana name, by the way. Sudama Sharma. Since he had the same name as his dear friend in Braja. Because Krishna had a cowherd boyfriend also named Sudama. And hearing Sudama's name, this Brahmana from Pandharpur, he was very attracted. Plus, the eternal associate of Krishna. So he showed affection to him, as he showed affection to Arjuna and Sudama the florist. Just this natural thing started between the two of them. Every night, during the time that Krishna and Balaram were at the school of Sandipani Muni, Krishna took rest by the side of Balaram, and into the night Krishna would speak about the residents of Vrindavan. What are they doing now? How they must be feeling? How is this one? How is that one? When you're attached, your thoughts go there naturally. Gopal Champu. So as the resident of Vrindavan, to the degree that one becomes attached to Krishna, Krishna becomes attached to that same devotee. It's love. So same when we're doing our sadhana bhakti, the attachment isn't there yet. But if we, this sharanagati once again, if we hanker, if we desire, if we strive and search and pray for that attachment to come, it'll come. Krishna becomes attached to you. Krishna presents himself more. And the distraction becomes less. That's this principle that we were discussing all weekend long. So now back to Dwarka. Krishna and Sri Sudama are seated together, holding each other's hands, conversing about the good old days when they were in school together. "My dear Brahmana, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a thrice-born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life, which lies beyond all ignorance." He's indicating a happiness of being situated in transcendence and a very clear reason for gratitude to be in one's heart, even in that position of transcendence, towards the person that one has heard from. Say it the other way. If there isn't that sense of gratitude in one's heart for the person from one who has heard, They're not situated in transcendence. Pain means that there's a disconnect with Krishna and the source of connection with Krishna. So Krishna is now speaking to Sudama again. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him as a twice-born brahmana and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. And then there's one who gives one, that gives the world, like our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, who gives the world spiritual knowledge, and that's certainly, O Brahmana, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master, like he does with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, and thus easily crosses over the ocean of material existence, can best understand their own true welfare. So here's this verse that we spoke about last night and also in Dwarka. I, the soul of all beings, so he's, previous verses he's speaking as a friend, now he's speaking as Paramatma. I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline, as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. So there's tons of commentary, exhaustive commentary on this verse from Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, exhaustive commentary. This is Krishna saying to his friend Sudama, they went to school together, that service that we did for Sudama, for Sandipani Muni, was for the pleasure of Sandipani Muni, but I, the soul of all beings, find more satisfaction in us having done that than, or one who does that, than any other thing. And bhakti means to please Krishna with whatever we do, and there's nothing more pleasing to Krishna. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, to teach this message of Bhagavad Gita to others, there's no one more dear to me than that person. So, teaching the message of Bhagavad Gita to others, or conveying its message to others, is only possible. You can't do it unless you have taken shelter of a spiritual master with your heart open to, with whatever it is that you have, serve the spiritual master. Then the knowledge can go in, and then you can transmit the knowledge effectively. And otherwise not. So, one is pleasing to Krishna, the other is in turn pleasing to Krishna. It's the natural sequence. One wants to also share with others this valuable thing that you've heard or received. It's natural. Not out of false ego, but as a, you have some happiness, you want to share that happiness with others. It's like Prahlad. For me, I don't have any concern. I just think of you and I'm completely contented. But there is one thing that makes me very disturbed, very unhappy. I have only one unhappiness, and that's the unhappiness of others that are suffering unnecessarily because of not knowing about you. I care very much about those people. So can you please save them? And the saving them is something the Supreme Lord wants to give, and it's by removing ignorance with knowledge or replacing that ignorance with devotion. awakening Krishna consciousness. That's what Lord Chaitanya's, that's what we're, somehow we came to the right place. Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission of giving liberally, giving Krishna consciousness to others. And you can do so, and you should do so, commensurate with the faith of the individuals who you're addressing. There's just some appreciation. There's this natural symmetry between Lord Chaitanya, the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's actually the same thing. It's packaged differently, but it's the same thing. There's like three pages of commentary on this one verse. All very valuable, very important. Bhaktisiddhanta refers to this verse in his teachings, his commentary in Chaitanya Bhagavat, making long purport on explaining this verse. There's several starters with the references from different scriptures that say the same thing. The singular significance of acting according to the mood of trying to please one's spiritual master and there isn't a more important principle of Dharma, because then that leads to the principle of surrender to Krishna, which is the principal Dharma. You can't take the position of surrender to Krishna, 1866, without surrender to the representative of Krishna, and one who does that is most pleasing to Krishna, because it means they're coming to him in the right way. Essentially, that's what his commentary is saying. There's some technical thing that's included in Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary. I just touch on it without all the detail. There's, for householders, there's some householders here. There's some daily ritual that a householder is to do. It's found, it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Can't remember what it's called. Mahayagya or something like that. And every householder is supposed to do. Every day, because there's living entities that you take their lives when you sweep the room or when you cook your food or you drink water. And so for those lives that you've taken because of your existing, you're to do this particular ritual. But this one thing takes care of all those things, and that's this one thing is the surrender to the spiritual master. Take care of all these things. Assuming you've found the right spiritual master, not somebody who's not really qualified. The one thing takes care of all those things. Would you like to hear Purushcharana from Hari Bhakti Vilas? Hari Bhakti Vilas is by Sanatana Goswami. It's not a smarta literature. It's Vaishnava literature. There are five aspects to the Purushcharana observance. Puja three times a day. Constant chanting of japa. Ablations of water. Daily fire sacrifice and feeding of the brahmanas. This means, Bhaktisiddhanta explains, this means that if one takes the vow to chant the mantra 10,000 times, so, you know, that's not even 16 rounds, then he must also offer 1,000 ablations of water, 100 ablations into the fire sacrifice, and feed 10 brahmanas. Of course, it is very difficult to undertake such an observance without any flaw. So, for the less qualified, the scriptures have prescribed a simple process that consists of serving the spiritual master. We would do better to follow the simple process. Again, this is not smarter regulation. This is Hari Bhakti Vilas for householders. So do this one thing, and it takes care of all the other things. Then continuing in Hari Bhakti Vilas, alternatively, one should satisfy the Guru by meditating on him when commencing worship of the deity. And this is one of our procedures. You don't just worship the deity, you meditate on and take permission from the spiritual master to worship the deity. He should think of himself as devotedly following the Guru like a shadow. One should constantly worship the Guru, who is the basis of all one's spiritual activities. Even if one does not perform the purest charana, one can attain perfection in chanting the mantra through service to the Guru. Of this there can be no doubt, for as it is said, yata kanchanam yati, just as copper becomes gold through the touch of a specially treated mercury, so does a disciple take on the qualities of Vishnu through the association of his Guru. Hari Bhakti Vilas. Sanatan Goswami writes a commentary on what he just wrote. The Purush Charan ritual can be perfected simply by serving the spiritual master. In conclusion, it may be said that service to the spiritual master is supremely beneficial. All perfections can be achieved through serving the spiritual master. Krishna himself appears as the spiritual master and gives the surrendered disciple the treasure of his heart, love for Krishna. And it goes on. It's also discussed in Adi Leela, so I'm not going to carry on. Very important verse, so you can go back and look and read the references if you like. It's text 34 of chapter 80. Krishna speaking to Sudama of the singular importance of what they did when they were in Sandipani Muni school, saying there's, for him, for Krishna, there's nothing more pleasing than that one thing. Very nice section. And it's nearly 12:30. So I think I'll just end so we can take a break and get back together. What time are we supposed to get back together again? 4 o'clock? 4 o'clock? Okay. So any comments, questions, discussion? Do we have a microphone back there? You're so expert. What would we do without you?
Guru Maharaj, I was wondering if you can elaborate on what was the hesitation of Sudama when going to meet Krishna. Why didn't he go earlier? My understanding is that he didn't want to trouble Krishna or something, but
he didn't want to go and ask Krishna for something. I'm not a materialistic bhakta. I don't go to Krishna to ask Krishna for something. I don't do that.
But he was such a devotee. Wouldn't he want to, like, see Krishna?
That was the only reason. That was the main reason. There was two main reasons. It's the duty of the husband to see to the concerns of the wife, you know, within reason. And so it was within reason. He understood her heart because he's married, and she wasn't, you know, it wasn't greed, it was just a concern of her affection for her husband, and so that was one reason, and the other is to go see his friend Krishna. But that was what carried him as he was walking to go see Krishna. It was anticipating meeting Krishna. It was devotional. And the other was a duty in his household ashram. But he had his reservations even when doing that. And the reservation, you know, mentioned. I don't want that kind of relationship with Krishna. I'm fully satisfied. What's the problem? Something else?
Maharaj, Sudama, being a topmost Brahmana devotee of Krishna, he was a contemporary, like he was physically present on this planet when
yeah.
Krishna was here.
Yeah.
So after the Gurukula was long time, like
long time.
What was the reason that he was? Was he feeling happiness, Krishna again?
Was he feeling unhappiness in separation? Is that your
more
question?
More happiness in separation?
No, we don't have any indication of that. He was just happy being happy. He was contented. He was Krishna conscious.
Like, just to follow up on the question, Maharaj, like there are several devotees while Krishna was here. They all knew that Krishna was Supreme Personality of Godhead, and still they continued with their ashram, like with wife and children and their duties. So what was, like, was that just to facilitate the pastimes of Krishna, or what was their intention to?
Depends on the individual. Here, in this case, Krishna is speaking that some devotees are showing, they're teaching others by their example of this is a life of Krishna consciousness, and that's their service to Krishna. Teaching others by example, this is how you do it. So some were like that. Towards the end of the 10th canto, there's this wonderful section where Krishna goes to visit King Bahulashva because he's his devotee, but he's so remote and so absorbed in his duties in service to Krishna, he hasn't made it all the way to Dwarka to go see Krishna, so Krishna goes to see him. But when he gets there, there's another person who greets Krishna at the border of the kingdom, and that's a Brahmana, Shutadev. And they both ask him, please come stay at my place and have your meal. So Krishna expands himself into two Krishnas. He goes with each one of them. But that Shutadev is, serving in some separation. That doesn't say why Shutadev didn't go to Dwarka, but the Bahulashra was busy with his duties as king. But fixed in his devotion. So Krishna had different ways of doing different things, and Krishna's devotees have different ways of feeling towards Krishna, different feelings. And Krishna just reciprocates with those feelings. In other words, there's variety. Like this variety is okay and that variety is not okay. There's variety of feelings of love for Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates. Is that all right?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Someone else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. The two questions. The disposition of the heart. When one hears about Krishna, the Rukmini has a different disposition and her reaction is different, and you mentioned somebody else. So my question is about, so when giving Krishna consciousness to others, is it necessary that we know the disposition of the other person, or what's the other person's attitude towards Krishna?
Well, that's up to them. We can't decide that for them. That's between them and Krishna. When Narada spoke to Kalyavana, Narada spoke to Kamsa, Narada spoke to, he knew his audience, so he spoke appropriate for the audience, but you know, their disposition of heart was different, and therefore their mindfulness of Krishna was different. Kamsa wanted to send people to go kill Krishna, Kalyavana wanted to go and directly confront him, and Rukmini wanted to marry him. She gave her heart. So, what I understand your question to be is something like, you know, how do we determine what others should be or will be thinking about Krishna once they hear about Krishna? It's not up to us. It's up to them. Now, we're going to convey naturally according to our feelings. It's like he conveys according to his feelings. Or Queen Kunti speaks about Krishna the way that she feels about Krishna. So our personality comes through in our speaking about Krishna. It doesn't change who Krishna is. It's just our relationship with Krishna is how we see Krishna. It's just natural. And then how that's going to strike the heart of the other person depends on the other person and their relationship with Krishna. Now, Prabhupada as a great acharya, who can say, some people speculate, but who can say definitively what was Prabhupada's relationship with Krishna, or in terms of rasa specifically? But whatever Prabhupada's rasa with Krishna is, he was giving in a very detached manner, or neutral manner, I should say, in a neutral manner, principles that according to anyone's relationship with Krishna, they could become connected to Krishna or aspire to restore that connection. So we can try to do like that. Still, how are you going to avoid your particular affinity? It's personal. And that's just fine. It would be kind of abnormal if it wasn't personal. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. One more thing was that you talked about someone who is hearing from the spiritual master and has not developed a gratitude. That person is not situated in the transcendence, but it's a material. So what's the result?
But it's what? It's not transcendental, but it's what? Something other than transcendental.
Yeah.
Mundane.
So what's the result of...
Worldly influenced.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the result of such hearing? What is the result of such hearing without gratitude?
Well, there's a mix. That, you know, that is what our position is. We have one foot in two different boats. And it's not inadvisable. So... We're, you know, what's the result? Cross the river a bit and fall in the lake. Fall into the pool of the material energy again from time to time. Get back in the boat. So, it's not smooth. But there's benefit because Krishna's in the picture. Wherever Krishna's in the picture, there's certainly going to be benefit. And as purification takes place, then we get a little more realization that we need to be just fixed in Krishna. That's the result. And, you know, keep good associations so you can stay on the right track.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much. Maharaj, you mentioned that don't share Krishna consciousness with false ego.
Don't what?
Don't share Krishna consciousness with false ego.
Don't share Krishna consciousness with false ego.
Yeah. So, could you give some more insight into this? Because personally I experience when I want to share that, that message won't go, because probably there is a reason. So, could you help, or could you give me more insights on how we can avoid?
We have to work with whatever we start Krishna consciousness from whatever position we're in. We can't be in a position we're not right away. So that means, in terms of your question specifically, we're influenced by false ego. So the result of such transmission is similar to his question. The result of such transmission is it's not full, or it's not like the sun shining through clouds. Depending upon the thickness of the clouds, it'll be less light or more light depending upon the thickness of the clouds. So it doesn't mean don't shine or don't transmit. But the fullness will not be effective to the degree that false ego is operating. But the transmitting, the act of trying to be the representative of Krishna, it's purifying, it's good for you and good for the person receiving. Less good than if you weren't free from false ego. So take it simply. Take it as a process of purification for yourself. And very carefully avoid the false ego position. I'm up here, they're down there, and I'm going to be kind and give them something they don't have. Avoid that. Just purification, being the Krishna's instrument. Dull, but Krishna's instrument. Try to please Krishna by that act. Is that right?
Thank you very much.
Anything over here? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. That yesterday those quotes was available on the screen during the 64 rounds.
Yes.
Does that book is available, Maharaj? Because some devotee was asking this morning.
Several people asked me yesterday, and I was tired last night, so I didn't go check. But I believe if you take the title of the book and the author and do something that everybody does, you Google something, something is going to come on your screen and say where you can buy the book. So the title of the book is Calling for Krishna. The author is Kanchana Vali Devi Dasi. Here's one person who wrote it down. You can write it down and pass it on. I assume Google knows. Google Guru knows.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You have something? Yeah. One question up front and we're going to end here. We'll come back at 4 o'clock.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I was wondering, you were speaking, when you're hearing the right way, then two things come. It's disgust for material things and attachment to spiritual topics.
You were doing pretty well speaking slowly, but then you started speeding up again.
Okay.
Do it again.
When you were speaking, the results of proper hearing?
Yes, the results of proper hearing.
Yeah, one is disgust for sense gratification, right? And the second one is attraction to spiritual.
The question people often ask is, how do I evaluate how well I'm progressing in Krishna consciousness? What are some standards? So, on the results side is, attraction for the temporary is diminishing, and attraction for the permanent is increasing. Very simple. So, disgust is stronger, but, you know, the slackening of attraction for the temporary. Then, you know, in the case of Sudama, there's this. I'll add something that I didn't touch on. There are different kinds of detachment. One kind of detachment is not attracted. Another is I'm disgusted. And they're, you know, both are detachment. But, you know, they're different kinds. It's not this one's better or that one's better. Different kinds of. And Sudama was in the category of he's not attracted. He wasn't thinking about it at all. Just like, you know, similar for Ambarish Maharaj. Like a pebble on the sidewalk. You walk out and put your shoes on and walk to your car to go where you're going and you see a pebble. You go, oh, look at that, a pebble. You don't even pay attention to it. Insignificant. No more. So that's one kind of detachment. Then another is this other, disgust. So at least as a sign of proper hearing is this detachment, whether it's this kind, that kind. You know, we could say Gaur Kishore had the, you know, he was disgusted when persons would take the position of being a renunciate or a sadhu or something, and in fact they were, you know, it's pretense. He was disgusted. And he would say it. And some person would just not even pay attention to that. So, this is a symptom of proper hearing is akinchana. There's no. And you can say it the other way around too, that quality of akinchana helps one to hear. So it's, you know, in other words, it's progressive. We're not all the way at once right there. So that slackening of affinity for the temporary, asat trishna, as that becomes more prominent, the slackening of for the thirst for the impermanent, then one can hear better. And then as one hears better, that thirst for the impermanent diminishes further. Just inversely proportionate. You know that language from math?
I was wondering the difference between aversion and that, because we're discouraged, like, we hear aversion is the flip side of attachment.
Yeah. Well, good point. The thought that's coming is there's a difference between the material anything and a spiritual same thing. Like material anger and transcendental anger. There is such a thing as transcendental anger, and there is such a thing as material anger. There's the attraction that the gopis have for Krishna, and there's the mundane attraction of boy-girl stuff. And, you know, they may look the same, but they're not the same. By far, they're not the same. Similarly, the aversion, that's the flip side of attachment, is the material aversion. And then there's this transcendental thing, where, you know, it's not that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was, in his aversion, he was actually attached to those things he was averse to. It's just, his feeling of attachment was so strong that something that interferes with it, take it away. Transcendental feeling. And there's room in spiritual life for all variety of transcendental feelings. What's the transcendental kind? Okay. So, it's 1:45. We have a 3-hour and 15-minute break. Chant and be happy. We'll see. So, I'll try to continue and conclude the Krishna and Sudama. And then we'll go to Krishna returns to Vrindavan. But he makes a stop along the way. A couple of stops along the way. Actually, according to the Bhagavatam, when Srila Prabhupada ki jai.